Hello and welcome once again to the Many Rules of Film Club. This is Jeff Yance. I'm the program director at the Loft Cinema, joined as always by my favorite occasional filmmaker, Heather Lares.
Hi, Jeff.
And my favorite multimedia artist, Rusty Bolle Stevenson.
I believe in long, slow, deep, soft, wet kisses that last 3 days.
Oh, that's a great movie.
Bull Durham.
Yeah.
Bull Durham, exactly.
That speech is the best.
I don't know. I had a moment where I thought you were talking to me. And, and then I got the reference. And it's fine. Okay. Just had a moment there. So that's appropriate, though, because today we're talking about love. Love in movies, and more specifically, great date movies. And even more specifically, bad date movies. So I think we all know that going to see movies with people we're trying to get to know is a pretty common thing among people who date.
Almost a cliche.
It's a cliche. Dinner and a movie. Dinner and a movie. Sometimes that's a good idea. Sometimes that's a bad idea.
Yeah.
So I'm curious, what do you, Rusty and Heather, think constitutes a good date movie?
Oh, I think, well, first, I believe in a movie and dinner. So I feel like if you know them well enough, so like by the third or fourth date, go to a movie and then have dinner, because then you have good stuff to talk about. That's kind of my theory on things.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think you should have a movie date on the first or second date. It's too early. You don't know them well
enough. Generally speaking, yes. Yeah. That's how I feel. You sit there quietly. I want you to anyway if we're on a date.
Yeah.
I want you to be quiet while we're watching the movie.
Yeah. Right.
Maybe you could say something or nudge me or something. But
But you can't go to the movie late, because I've had dates say that. I don't mind if we miss the first 10,
that's
15
a no,
minutes.
No. Like, no. No. Are you
that's
crazy?
Not gonna, that relationship will never work.
Yeah, it will never work.
It will never work.
And you don't want them to talk during the movie. At least I don't. And if they're a talker, they need to... No, that's not happening either.
No.
So I think, I mean, in general, a good date movie is one that you both can enjoy and that afterwards you'll have something to talk about. That's kind of like the combo for me anyways.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I think something to talk about. I like talking about movies, obviously.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think we all do. So that's the three of us, certainly. That's going to be something we like. I have used movies as kind of a litmus test sometimes. Like, do you like this movie? Can you tolerate, you know, this director or something? That's something that will at least have my awareness raised. You know, something else. If you think it's weird that I want to sit through the credits, we're going to have a problem.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, especially if you won't. You're
big
like,
time.
Oh, I'll wait for you outside.
Oh,
like,
my gosh.
No, you need to wait with me.
Right. Or if you think it's weird that I even want to wait through the credits. Like, there are so many great films that I need to sit there and process most really good films. In fact, it'll take a couple more days, but at least that 10 minutes of the credit, I want to sit and think about things and maybe look at who was in it and...
Yeah.
Do I recognize these names from other places? That's something that's fairly important to me as somebody who really likes film, and it matters. It's part of my life.
Yeah, and people who are willing to actually talk about it, because I think you've probably both experienced going to a movie with someone who doesn't want to talk about it because they don't think there's anything to talk about.
Right.
Yeah.
Or
which
I've
is ridiculous.
Family members tell me that I ruin movies because I talk about them
so much. I think
so
about it too much.
And it's like, no, that's my thing. Like, if you don't, that's cool. But that's what I get. Part of the joy out of life is to look at a movie and talk about it or think about it. And it's, and you may think it's overanalyzing it to death, but to me, that's what is fun. So
I had a longtime girlfriend. We went to see Pulp Fiction together, and I wanted to talk about it afterwards. And she's like, why do you always have to talk about these things? That was like, oh, my gosh.
I can't date you.
And we'd been together for a while. So it was a real
wow,
eye-opening
ouchy,
moment.
Yeah.
That's a reveal you don't want to have.
Like, yeah, no, yeah. I think things were, the writing was on the wall in other ways in that relationship, but certainly that was something was like, oh my, well, that's something I love to do.
Right.
Is to analyze film and think about what were they really trying to say with that dialogue. There's the subtext of something, and that's not always obvious, and sometimes it takes talking through that, in fact. So yeah, if you don't want to do that, we won't date.
Well, it's fun. Like, for me, I like geeking out on, like, if a shot's really beautiful, I'll think about how they lit that shot. Mm-hmm. Or for God's sakes, if they have some bad lighting continuity, I'll be like,
God
did
forbid.
You notice? And they'll look at me like, what are you talking about? I'm like, that lighting would not be continuous like that between that scene and that scene. Oh. And I will do that, not to the minutia, but if something's glaringly obvious, I'm insulted because I feel like they should have reshot that.
Right. And I have a problem when I see films set in different periods. Mm-hmm. I'm very cognizant of the music, the cars, the clothes, if they are period specific.
Right.
And I want to talk about that afterwards if it doesn't actually pan out. And very, very rarely does anyone else want to talk about that.
Yeah. It's hard to find someone who really appreciates it and wants to discuss it like that. It's very hard. Yeah.
Yes. And please, as a warning, the worst thing you can do if you're going to be dating someone who loves movies, don't pretend to love what they love.
Oh, God, don't do that. Yeah.
This happened to me when, after it was all over, the person said to me, I pretended to love every movie that you said you loved. I didn't love David Lynch. I didn't like it. It just went on and on.
The horror.
You feel betrayed.
And it was like a Sixth Sense twist. Like that. Wait, you're really dead? What? I don't.
It's funny you mentioned David Lynch. My wife and I had been dating for a few weeks, maybe a month or so. Before we were married. And we went to see our first film that we went to see together as a couple was Mulholland Drive. Mm. Not a great date movie.
Ew. No.
And my wife does not like David Lynch that much. She'll watch Twin Peaks. She likes that. But he freaks her out too much. I understand that. I love David Lynch. But I don't mind that we have a disagreement there. If she pretended to, that's just relationship 101. Almost is right. Is don't lie inherently like that.
It's going to come back and bite you at some point.
You want, for me anyway, I want somebody who can be real with me and tell me what they really think. I don't want them just giving me sunshine and lollipops all the time.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
Total sense. So now we've kind of laid the groundwork, I think. Mm-hmm. So maybe let's talk about what we think are actually great date films. So Heather, why don't you tell us a great date film?
Well, I think one of my top movies that I think would be a date film, great date film, would be Moonrise Kingdom by Wes Anderson.
Yes.
I ended that movie with my cheeks hurting because I smiled and laughed so much about that. And I think it's such a, Wes Anderson creates these quasi-magical worlds. And that one by far is one of the most magical. And it's that young love of Sam and Susie finding each other and running away from the adults because the adults just don't understand them. And the adults are too busy with their own crap to pay attention to the kids. And the kids just go off and they live in their own little island on the beach of the lake. And they get to have their own little very innocent love affair, I guess, if you will. And it's so great. It's just the acting's great. I mean, Wes Anderson does such a good job at having that ensemble cast,
Yep.
Bill Murray, Francis McDormand.
McDormand, yeah.
And the kids are such great actors. Ed Norton is the troop leader of the faux Boy Scouts.
Yes, Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis is the cop that's like, he's kind of got like a lonely heart and he just wants to be involved and someone to love him. And I think it's something we can identify with, even though it's like this magical story of kids getting to live their fantasy out and run away and live their lives. Temporarily anyways. And like the culmination of all the drama at the end, the lightning strike and Tilda Swinton trying to take him away because, he should be a ward of the state and ruin everything. But it has its drama, its fantasy, and its fun moments. The soundtrack is great. The art direction is always great. It just made me feel good to watch. And I think it would also give you something to talk about after the movie because you both could kind of identify with, I think everyone at some point can identify with that like 11-year-old first love or 12-year-old first love of seeing a girl or a boy and liking them and,
it's the fantasy you wish you could have had. You wish you could have gone off to an island with
right.
the boy or girl that you liked and kind of
bring my record player.
Had your adventure.
And he does it in such like a, it's not a tawdry way. It's a very innocent love story between these two kids. And
it's innocent but sophisticated.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's a sophisticated True. Innocence that's why adults can appreciate it.
That's a good point, yeah.
And that's why it works so well, in fact, and why you can identify, right?
And I think, you know, a lot of Wes Anderson movies people don't like because it's too deep. Like, it's too silly and too deep at the same time.
Right.
And Moonrise Kingdom, I think, is such a good level of both. Like, it's silly, but deep in that, it makes us all think of where we used to be in, yes, in our childhood. And so, yes, I think it's accessible more than a lot of other of his movies. So I think it's a good, because, you know, for a date movie, I mean, you want a good movie, but you don't want it to be too deep in that the other person's like, well, what, you know, I don't understand half of it, or, you know.
And you also, this is interesting, I think you don't want it to be too sexual.
Yes.
Because I think an early date movie, because it sets up a lot of expectations and it seems like you're maybe intimating something that you may not be intimating.
Yeah.
If there's a lot of sex in the film. So Moonrise Kingdom is great because it's more just sort of a fantasy,
yes,
adventure. It's about what romance would be like if you were a child.
Yeah. I went to the movies with this guy that I really, really liked, and we went to see Talk to Her, which is Almodovar's movie, and it has, mm-hmm, the one with the vagina.
Yes, the giant
and
vagina.
And I was just sitting there going, why did we pick this? Why? What's going on? This is so not, yes, the movie to be watching with someone I have a crush on.
Right.
So Moonrise Kingdom, perfect. It's not a sexualized kind, nope, of thing, and it's lovely and beautiful, and it makes you smile, and it's great.
Whereas Unbearable Lightness of Being, right, might be a bit much,
right,
for an early date film.
That's exactly.
It's an incredibly erotic film.
Yes, that's true.
And it's great. It's a great, right, film. It's amazing. But I that's where it's too sexualized for me to go, like, your third date and let's, yeah, go watch The Unbearable Lightness of Being.
Well, and especially don't take someone to see something like 9.5 weeks. Like, if it's like,
oh,
not,
yeah,
only sexual but kinky sexual, because that's going to supposedly reveal, it's giving away way too much about your personal life.
Yeah.
So, yes, yeah, so you have to think about this carefully, the date, yes, movies. But I think Moonrise Kingdom, fantastic,
perfect
choice.
Perfect date movie.
And so, Rusty, what about you? Good,
well,
date movie.
And I think Moonrise Kingdom works really well, too. If you, it is a great introduction to Wes Anderson, but it also is great for cinephiles. Yeah. Because it's steeped in cinematic history.
Yeah,
I mean, it's steeped. You can see French films in it. You can see silent films in it. Mm-hmm. So it's great. And if you love film, and honestly, if I'm going to have a first date, I'm very happily married now, and my wife have had our first date at a movie. But I would want somebody who's not afraid of, and this is where my favorite pick comes from, is you've got to probably love film. And so to go on a date with me and for us to have a long-lasting relationship, like my wife, you would have had to have loved film. And so I think about a lot of different ones. I talk to a lot of different people, and there are some really great ones that I could recommend. I thought about Say Anything. We've talked about that before in the John and Joan Cusack episode.
Yep. That's a good date movie, I think.
It's a great date movie.
Especially for someone, I'm 43, but for Gen Xers,
yeah,
it's nostalgic without being schlocky.
Mm-hmm.
It's real.
It's real. There are so many moments of it that are so real, that between the dad and the daughter in particular, mm-hmm, that I just love. You know, when she's like, oh, he's got that, he had that look in his eye. He was starting to get that look in his eye towards the end of our nights. Do you know that look? And John Mahoney's character is like, yes, yes, I know that look.
Yes.
And she's like, and I told him no, but then I jumped on him anyway at the end.
Yeah.
And I just love that moment. It's such a great moment. So Say Anything, Bull Durham that I referenced before, that's one of my favorite sports films of all time.
Mm-hmm.
Probably another episode.
Don't
will
ever
you...
watch it with your parents. I've made that mistake.
Yeah, no, don't watch Bull Durham with your parents.
Oh, God,
no.
I'm so embarrassed.
I liked Celeste and Jesse Forever from 2012.
Oh, yeah.
It's really sweet.
Yeah.
So Celeste and Jesse Forever is really good, but I settled on Punch Drunk Love, Paul Thomas Anderson's film from 2002. Right. It is not what I would call a typical date film.
No.
But if
no.
if you know that you're seeing, here's my example of it is, I'm meeting this person and we're talking and I'm like, oh, I love Paul Thomas Anderson films. Don't you love his work? Yeah, I do. And then we're talking, oh, Magnolia is so great. And I'm like, have you seen Punch Drunk Love? And they're like, no. I'm like, oh, we've got to see Punch Drunk Love. That's a person I would take to see.
Yeah.
Because it's very different. It's really discordant in a lot of places. Adam Sandler is in it, if you're not familiar. It's not an Adam Sandler typical film.
No.
He's very serious. He's really weird and has a hard time expressing himself. He grew up with seven. Oh, he's amazing in it. He's amazing in it.
I think
his best role.
Yeah, for sure.
And the Adam Sandler character has Barry. He grew up with seven sisters, and they all just torment the heck out of him. And he's got all these frustration issues, and he's not somebody who's been, he's awkward around women for sure. He's awkward around everyone. Mm-hmm. And yeah. So he has a hard time meeting someone. And so when he does meet somebody, it's going to be an awkward thing. And his sister sets him up. It's really bizarre at times. When he meets his love interest, Lena, who's played by Emily Watson, for the second time, his sister brings her to his office, his work. And it's just a really, really awkward scene. It's got these really loud drums going on, and there's crashes going on in the background.
Oh, it's panic-inducing.
It's panic-inducing.
It really
that
is.
Whole
yes.
scene is
yes.
really, really, and because you're feeling what he's feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. He's at work, and his sister has come in with this woman who's interested in him, and mm-hmm. she's asking him all these weird questions, and he's got this awkward, he'd mm-hmm. called a sex line, and they're now calling him back and harassing him, and so he's getting these calls at work while it's going on.
Right. Right.
It's so hard, but there's something about, and we didn't talk about this yet, but in dating, there's a lot of science behind having something that's a little exciting or adrenaline-inducing on a date is a good thing for your compatibility, because what ends up happening is people associate that rush of endorphins or adrenaline with the person they're talking to as opposed to the situation. And so this is a movie that will cause your adrenaline to run. Like, it puts you on edge, that scene.
Yeah.
And a lot of the movie does.
Like a horror film.
Yeah, like a horror
film.
Which
would be a great
date
film. Yeah.
Lots of people think going to a horror film because you get excited and your date's going to grab you.
Yeah, yeah.
And so this movie has elements of that for sure. And then it turns into an atypical love story. Adam Sandler's really dealing with a lot of aggression issues, and so when they have their like love scene, it's really awkward hilarious. But if you have liked Paul Thomas Anderson films, then you're going to go in knowing you're going to see something that's going to challenge you.
Oh God, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be offbeat.
It's going to be
way, yes.
Yeah, offbeat.
Make you feel a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah.
For sure, for sure. I took my parents to see Magnolia.
Sorry.
And so, yeah. That,
yeah,
that
sorry about
made
that.
Made me uncomfortable.
Yeah.
So, it will. It'll make you uncomfortable. But it's a great film, and it's got elements that we can all relate to in that those panic-inducing moments, like in the scene where he's meeting the Emily Watson character, that's almost what it's like when you're falling in love.
Yeah.
Is you've got these panic-inducing things happening to you. Drums in your ears when you try to talk to them. And, and so I love it for that reason.
It's sweet, too.
It's really sweet. It's sweet and lovely. It's well-written. It's incredibly acted. Some really great... Adam Sandler's turn is great. Emily Watson's amazing in it.
Yes, and I have to give Paul Thomas Anderson credit for using the Shelley Duvall song from Popeye. He needs me, he needs me.
Mm-hmm.
Which is great because that song never gets the attention it deserves. And it's a great romantic song. It's very sweet. And that's what I think of when I think of Punch Drunk Love. I don't necessarily think about the discordant drumming. I think about the Shelley Duvall song.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But that's what that was my takeaway. Yeah, that's right.
The cinematography is beautiful. If you haven't, Punch Drunk Love has been analyzed quite a bit. So if you're into that kind of stuff, you should look it up and definitely watch it. It's got some beautiful lighting and color themes that Paul Thomas Anderson puts in there. It's great.
His blue suit. Adam Sandler's
blue
suit.
It's blue suit.
Amazing.
And, you know, when I read the review for Punch Drunk Love, one of the local critics, who I won't name, called the colored lines transitions in the movie circus-like. It made no sense. And I was like, it makes perfect sense if you think about the tense and anxiety that he's going through, that all of that circus-like theme is what he's feeling. So it's definitely things to appreciate in there if you like that visual stuff.
Yes, definitely.
And Adam Sandler in that suit, I think there are lots of references to Hitchcock in there, particularly North by Northwest. I haven't gone back and watched North by Northwest since I recently watched Punch Drunk Love, but I really feel like those movies almost go together for some reason.
Well, that's definitely a Cary Grant suit he's wearing.
Yeah.
Yes, for sure.
So maybe not a typical date movie, but if you're going out with a cinephile Yes. And or you find yourself on a second or third date and you're like, hey, I know what we'll do. Let's watch Punch Drunk Love. I'll rent it. We'll fix up some popcorn, maybe have a glass of wine.
Right.
Perfect.
Yeah. And if they say, I don't like Adam Sandler movies, then you know you're probably off to a good start.
Good start, yes.
That's a great litmus test.
Yes. And you say, but you'll like this one.
But you'll like this one. Yes, yeah. This is not an Adam Sandler movie. Right. This is a Paul Thomas Anderson film with Adam Sandler
exactly.
in it.
Exactly. Yeah.
And so you're right. That is a good litmus test.
Got to do it. And so for me, and speaking of a good cinephile date movie, one of my favorite romance films is In the Mood for Love, the Wong Kar-wai film from 2000. And I guess your response means you like it too, Heather.
It's one of the most beautiful movies that was ever made.
It's just gorgeous. It's from Hong Kong. It's about unrequited love, so it's incredibly sensual, but it's not sexual because there's no sex in the film. But it's all about longing and yearning, and it's just amazingly shot. The costumes are beautiful. The lighting is beautiful.
The writing is beautiful.
The writing is beautiful. Probably one of the most visually sensuous films, I think, that has ever been made. And so that's a great film for someone who loves film.
Yes, not anybody can watch that.
If they appreciate it as a film, then you're in.
Oh my God, I would almost marry them if they.
Yes, yes. So that's definitely one of them. But the one I really wanted to talk about was one of my favorite movies of all time is Harold and Maude from 1971. This is more, I think, a good date movie if the person you're hoping to date is a little morbid and strange.
True.
But I think everyone knows Harold and Maude, and the basic concept is it's about an 18-year-old young man who's dating a 79-year-old woman. They meet at funerals. He's obsessed with suicide. He attempts fake suicides for comedic effect. It's actually very funny, his fake suicides. Yes. So he's depressed. She loves life. They start a relationship. She teaches him how to appreciate life. And then it's got what some people call sort of a horrible twist ending, but I find it very uplifting in a weird way. I think if the person you're watching the movie with also finds the ending uplifting, you're good for at least a few months. I don't know, about
that
whole
would be crazy
lifelong
good.
relationship. But it's incredible because it's a movie about falling in love with the spirit of a person rather than the body of a person.
Yeah.
Because I've had a lot of people say, oh, just the concept is too grotesque, an 80-year-old woman and a teenager.
Not the point.
And it's not the point. Yeah. And the people in the film that try to stop the couple from getting together make the same point, like, oh, this is repulsive, the withered flesh against the taut young flesh. But they're so focused on the bodies and the physical act of consummating love that they don't even acknowledge that these people have a connection on a deeper level. Which hopefully is what you're looking for when you're dating someone. Eventually you'll get to that. Mm-hmm. So I think Harold and Maude sort of skips over all the physical stuff and gets right into the deeper kind of emotional, spiritual connections. So it's shorthand. It's a good date shorthand film to kind of skip over all that. Plus it's hilarious.
Yes, it's great.
Yeah.
Great comedy great dark comedy.
Dark comedy, yeah.
Yeah, and...
And if you can find someone who finds it amusing, to me, is a good thing. And you agree.
And you can always use the Cat Stevens soundtrack as an entree if they are more into music, because it's got a great soundtrack
does
kind of influence the Amy Mann soundtrack on Magnolia and a lot of other films. Yeah, mm-hmm. Using one artist for all the songs in a film. So I've often found people who run screaming from Harold and Maude. And that's fine, but some people have really enjoyed it. Mm. And so for me, it's pretty good average. I've had a pretty good average with Harold and Maude. I have not watched it with a 79-year-old woman, which is going to have to be my next thing that I try.
That
so we'll see how that goes.
And do like a little interview with her afterwards.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Well,
a debrief.
Yeah.
We were, my wife and I were talking with her aunt and her grandma, and her aunt was talking to us about Harold and Maude, and we had seen it, and we were all chatting about it. And her aunt said something about, oh, it's, you know, the all these, this young 20-something going after this 80-year-old woman. And that totally perked my wife's grandmother's ears up. Wait a minute, there's a world where where there are 20-somethings interested in 80-year-olds? Why, where is that world?
Yeah. So, sign me up.
When sign
I'm
her
80,
up.
I'll
yeah.
be looking for that world.
Oh, she was great. I miss her. She's since passed, Mary. But I just wanted to share that for
a
moment.
That's a nice story.
Yeah, it's really sweet. I think about her a lot when I think about that movie.
Yeah, one, it's easy for me. I always had a crush on Ruth Gordon, who plays Maude. I think it was the right actress.
She's such a great actress.
And she's great.
She fit it perfectly. Her
yes.
look, her demeanor.
Oh, yeah. I don't even see an older woman when I see her in films. I just see this great person.
Yeah.
You know, and I would love to hang out with her. But
yeah.
So I guess that leads us to maybe the more interesting discussion. Just briefly, bad date movies, because there's a lot of them, and they could be great films, but not great date films.
Yeah.
So, Heather.
Oh, God, I have the tip top.
Yeah.
You know, when you think of, okay, first of all, no movie that includes rape is a good date movie.
Good rule.
It's always firsthand, and if a man or a woman were to suggest it, you should avoid them. But I would say the tip-top first worst date movie is Irreversible by Gaspar Noé. And it's from 2005, I think.
Mm-hmm.
He's French, yeah.
Yep.
Just briefly, the concept is the movie's told in reverse. So you're seeing the ending at the beginning, and you go all the way back. It's a love story. So you think, like, oh, it's a love story. Honestly, after halfway through, I could handle it. But it was after the bad stuff happened. And he tells the story in reverse. And there's basically a story of a woman or a couple who fall in love. And the woman who is played by Monica Bellucci.
Mm, yes.
Is Vincent Cassel the... No. He kind of looks like him.
He does look like Vincent Cassel.
But anyways, the male protagonist, you see him at the beginning doing this violence against this guy. And you find out that it's because he raped his girlfriend, who's played by Monica Bellucci. And if you were around when it came out in 2005, you'll know, if you went to go see it, maybe at the Loft, you would get a warning saying that, you know, this is a very brutal, graphic movie. You know, we're not going to refund your money, but if you need to take a break, you know, you're more than welcome to take a break and go back in. And I just thought it was joking because I'm hardcore. You know, I can watch pretty much anything I thought. And, I went with a friend, and we went upstairs to the small theater, not many people, like maybe 10 people in there, and watched it. And the first scene is horribly brutal. Guy gets his head smashed in with a fire extinguisher. And you think, oh, if I got past that, I'm cool. And then about a third of the way in or halfway is the scene where she gets raped. And it's, oh, how do I say? It is the most horrific scene that has ever affected me as a film goer ever, and will ever probably, and hopefully ever. It is and I'm not exaggerating in that. I think it's about 10 minutes of her being raped.
Oh yeah, and it feels even longer.
Yeah, and it feels so long. Yeah. And I had to go take a break. My friend was with me. She wanted to go smoke a cigarette. So I went outside with her. She smoked and we went back in, and it was just ending.
Mm.
And honestly, like at certain points of it, I had to close my eyes. But just hearing her screaming while she was being raped was so traumatizing for me that it took me weeks. Like, honestly, after I saw that movie, I didn't want anyone to touch me. I wanted, like, and no man was like I didn't want to be around any men. And it was just horrifying. And I don't think I'll ever have another movie affect me like that.
No, and it's brilliant, but that's
right.
That scene is infamous. And I remember when I saw it, when I left the theater, as I mentioned to you earlier, I was uncomfortable making eye contact with any women who were also leaving the theater because I felt so horrible about what I'd seen, about what position I would put them in if I was looking at them and how they were feeling.
Yeah.
It's very powerful. And something like that on screen should be horrible because it shouldn't be glamorized in any way or made less horrible than it really is.
Yeah.
But I would not take a date to see it.
No, and I look at it now, and I, you know, I rewatched it, but I had to skip fast forward through those parts because I'm not going to traumatize myself again. But I remember watching it, and then so it's irreversible. So, the movie is told in reverse. So in the end, you're getting to see their love story, which is beautiful, and you have these conflicting emotions because you just were traumatized, and yet you see this beautiful story. And so it messes you up on both levels. And I can only imagine taking a date to this movie. I cannot wrap my head around that. So don't ever take a date to that movie. And it's just bad news. And you know, like we were saying before, like anything, whether it's overly sexual, positively or negatively, is bad.
It's a bad idea.
It's a bad idea. Yes. And especially like when someone I can't. Yeah, I can't talk about it anymore. It's horrible. It's that horrible.
You're being traumatized even talking about it.
Thinking about it again was horrible. So, yeah, be forewarned.
Yeah,
bad date movie.
Bad date movie. And I do, I will say, I admire the storytelling and the attempt to way he tells a story, backwards. And
brilliant.
He has some crane shots that are beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
But besides that.
If there's an Adam Sandler movie playing next door, go see that.
I would see Waterboy over.
Okay, all right.
The Wedding Singer.
Yeah.
Little Nicky. Got it. Okay.
I don't know. Little Nicky.
That's a toss-up.
That's pushing it.
Okay, so Rusty, what about you? What's a terrible date movie?
I went on a couple terrible date movies. Uh-huh. I saw The English Patient on a second date.
Terrible date movie.
Yeah, terrible date movie.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. Not a movie I even really liked that much. I know. I'm like Elaine from Seinfeld. Yeah. not a movie. I was kind of bored by it. But the one I picked is a movie I really liked, but that is difficult to watch. It's The Lobster from 2016.
Oh, yes.
I still haven't seen it.
It's so good. You can find it. I think it's on Amazon Prime right now.
It is, yeah.
You can find it on Amazon Prime. It's up for an Academy Award for Best Original Screenplay, which means it's really good. Mm-hmm. It's a really good film. It won't win.
No.
Which makes it really good.
It's too weird.
It's too weird. But The Lobster, and just to give a brief synopsis, it's so bizarro. A guy's checking in. His wife has died, right?
Yes.
And he's checking into this, I don't know what to call it, a motel or a resort, I guess.
A resort
for people who are single to meet other people. When you sign up for this place, though, they set you up. They give you so much time, 30 days. You can earn more time by hurting single people. So you can earn more time so that you don't run out of your time.
It's kind of a comedy, too.
It's kind of a comedy. It's really bizarre. Because at the end of your time, if you have not found your mate, you will be turned into an animal. Mm-hmm. And the main character, played by Colin Farrell, chooses he will be turned into a lobster.
That's his choice.
That's his choice. He likes swimming.
Yeah.
And so this is, and they tell him that that's a good choice. You've chosen something that's good. Most people want to choose a dog.
Right.
But don't do that. And so they spend their time with these other single people, and it's so awkward. They're constantly trying to find things where they are compatible, where they have a commonality. And it really is a metaphor for modern online dating.
Yes.
We flipped it around a little bit. We flipped the script where instead of finding out about your date when you're out on the date, now you find out these things ahead of time.
In advance, yes.
Oh.
And so that's what's happening in The Lobster is they have to go on stage and share these experiences that would on a date be charming and endearing, but on a stage by yourself reciting the story.
Where you're being evaluated and judged.
It's awkward and weird and awful.
Yes.
And the whole movie is really this commentary on modern dating in the guise of this kind of dystopian future movie where you could be turned into animals if you don't find your mate. And where people, what happens is a lot of times people, when they go to the resort, they realize, oh, this isn't for me. So they go out on their own. They strike out on their own, which is what the Colin Farrell character finally does, too, about halfway through. And you're living out on your own. So the people in the resort, part of the way they spend their time is hunting down these people who've gone out on their own and shooting them. And that's how they earn more time at the resort to try to find people. And so there's a real pressure to find your person that you're compatible with. And so, like, people will tell, I have spontaneous nosebleeds. And so that's their trait.
So do I.
Yes. And so someone will beat their head against the wall so that they think, look, I too have spontaneous nosebleeds.
We have something in common.
We have something in common.
It's
terrible, but it's a take on what modern dating is, was where we flipped everything. Where you're looking online and you're swiping left or right based on what you see that they like or this story that they tell, that you ordinarily would have found out on an earlier day or on a date early on, and you would know if you were compatible or not. But now you're looking at it, is this person compatible with me? Do they like Star Wars? Do they like Adam Sandler movies? And so we flipped that script, that narrative, in the last 20 or so years, 15 years. And it had been done to some extent before with dating services, and you'd watch videos and stuff. But now it's happening where it's just ubiquitous. If you're single, you're frequently on some site.
Yes, swipe.
Swiping through people who are maybe compatible with you, maybe not. But I'm just using this kind of arbitrary means of looking. Oh, they like this. I like this. Maybe we should go out. And so
that's
it's a little different. It's a little different. And that's what The Lobster's about. And it's a great film. It's a great film.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to watch because the Colin Farrell character, in addition to going out on his own, before he does, he tries to date this heartless person. He's told, oh, she's heartless and she doesn't care about anything. Mm. So he pretends to be heartless.
Aww. It doesn't work.
It does not work. And she tests him. To see if he's really heartless or not. And she does some pretty horrendous things. And when she's describing one horrendous thing, my wife, when we were watching it the first time, was done. She's like, I can't take this movie anymore.
Yeah.
Because she's describing what she's done to this, to this thing and this dog. And it's really...
The dog, yes.
Yeah, it's really... And when she's describing it, you don't even see it until you see the dog after the fact. But when she's describing it, that's what's so disturbing.
I don't know. I might be the same way. I'm like, you can kill anybody movie, but if you mess with the dog, I'm like, nope.
Right? It's funny. I don't know if you've watched Atlanta, the series. But where he runs he goes to a target range just real quickly. He goes to a shooting range, and people have targets with human figures on there. And the one guy runs a target with a dog down to the end, and they're like, "What kind of heartless monster are you?" But we do. If you hurt a dog in a movie.
Well, I will tell you. So we ran The Lobster last year at The Loft, and it was one of our biggest films of the year, but it was also the most polarizing film that I can never remember showing at The Loft. Like, people either loved it, saw it multiple times, or we had people saying, this is the worst film I've seen in 75 years of going to see movies. I've been seeing movies since the day I was born, and this is the worst film I've ever seen.
Little Nicky? No.
Exactly. Well, and I tell people, like, you just haven't seen enough movies. Right. This is the worst movie you've ever seen.
Yeah.
You should go see some Adam Sandler films.
Yeah.
But it was really polarizing, and a lot of people actually said they were on dates seeing it, and I think it made people really uncomfortable because it's a real nasty critique of how people find dates.
Modern love and modern dating.
It's rough out there.
And so I think a lot of people took it very personally, like, oh, this movie's making fun of me.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
And they also hated the dog dying. Like, that was what we heard a lot of. Like, the dog can't.
That pushed my wife. My wife wouldn't finish
the
film.
Yeah.
I finished it on my own. So
okay.
even as a bad date movie with your wife, it's a bad date movie.
Yes.
Let alone somebody you barely know.
And certainly don't take your dog to see it.
No.
That's dogs will really hate it.
Yeah.
Especially if the dog is your brother.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. But a fine pick. I think it's definitely a great pick. Yeah. And so my pick is one that I think is a fantastic movie, but I think if you ever harbor any hopes of getting married at any point to anyone, you should avoid this movie like the plague. It's Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf from 1966, really incredible film based on a play by Edward Albee, directed by Mike Nichols, who did The Graduate and Carnal Knowledge.
Working Girl.
It was his. His first film, which is kind of amazing.
Oh my god!
As a director,
that is amazing.
Yeah, and it's Richard Burton and Elizabeth Taylor playing a couple, George and Martha, who have a dinner party, and they're middle-aged married couple. They clearly aren't that fond of one another.
No.
They invite a younger couple over for the party. They decide to play fun and games with them by trying to destroy the younger couple's marriage, by trying to destroy their own marriage. They end up getting into an actual physical brawl at one point. He tries to strangle her. He pretends to try and shoot her. They play a game of Hump the Hostess. Which I'll leave that to your imagination, what that's about. And it's pretty, I think caustic would be too light a word for it.
Yes.
It's just a constant assault of kind of insults and...
it's an assault on decency.
Yeah.
It is. And just really uncomfortable watching these people who are married. And in real life, of course, Burton and Taylor were married famously, had a very tumultuous relationship. So I think part of the kind of perverse fascination comes from watching a real married couple playing a married couple who hate each other and want to murder each other.
Didn't they get married twice in real life? Was that
yes,
one?
Or maybe even three times.
Oh, God, yeah.
Up and down. And then at one point, I love that Elizabeth Taylor said, I'm tired of playing Martha from Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, because she felt like that was becoming her real life role with Richard Burton.
Yeah.
And then I think that was it at that point. So it's definitely a great film, a great piece of cinema, and also very groundbreaking. It was the first film that included a lot of certain language, that is now fairly commonplace, but in movies back then was not. It was very shocking. It was the first movie to have a warning for mature audiences only. It was before the rating system was in effect. It's the film that's credited with instigating the rating system, which came about 2 years later because of the language.
And the themes.
And the theme. It's also the themes.
Like partner swapping.
Partner swapping, impotency.
A lot of drinking.
A lot of drinking.
Oh my gosh, the drinking. That's what my wife was. We
like
were
water.
Watching it last night. Yeah. Uh-huh. They have three strong drinks in about 10 minutes of the movie. And you're like, oh my gosh.
No wonder why they're arguing.
This is going to go badly. This will not go well.
Yeah. And then there's a kind of a horrible twist at the end when you find out about what happened to their child and you sort of understand why they hate each other so much.
Yeah.
But getting to that point, it doesn't really calm the nerves after what you've seen. I mean, it sort of explains it a little bit, but
it doesn't excuse it. You're not like, oh, that's why they hate each
other. Oh, it's
other.
Fine.
And
they,
I feel so much better
They should
now.
Hate each other. Yeah. They should live together in complete disgust and hatred for the rest of their lives. Really what you're saying is you should kill each other.
Yeah, or never
Quick.
See each other again.
Quick. Yeah, but they're sort of bound together in this. And it's this really horrible, caustic statement on marriage about why people get together and the
Not
kind of traumas good. That bind people and how you can't separate.
That's
and
a good point. The traumas that bind people is a good theme.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And neither couple got married because they necessarily loved one another at all.
No.
They got married for different reasons, but it none of it makes you feel good about marriage.
Right. I think my favorite line from the film is when Elizabeth Taylor tells Richard Burton, if you actually existed, I would divorce you.
Oh,
oh my gosh,
oh,
there are so many lines.
Like, it's a great zinger movie, too. If you're looking for zingers to hurl at your mate,
That could create unwanted tension on your date that you didn't really think was there. Like,
oh, yeah.
You really like her character because he might think that you would be like that, or, you know, it's just
exactly,
a bad idea.
Exactly, right. Yeah.
It's a terrible date movie. Yeah. We tried watching it again last night, and before bed, I had to turn it off just because it was too much.
Yeah.
It was
it
too much. And it has aged really well.
Mm-hmm.
Here we are 50 years later. It's very watchable.
Oh, yeah.
It doesn't feel dated in any way, shape, or form. It's really a great film. I recommend it as a film, but not as a date movie at all.
And a great double feature with War of the Roses. I think if you're
that'd be good. But end with War of the Roses because at least there's some levity like, I mean, it's still sad, but there's some comedy.
There's some comedy, and at least it ends with both of them dying, so yes. they both get what they want.
Yeah. Ah, yes.
Whereas in Virginia Woolf, they just keep living.
There's a culmination. That's right. Don't get in Virginia Woolf.
There's an episode of The Office. I think it's called The Dinner Party. Mm. Maybe it's not. That's not the title of it, but that's what happens is Michael Scott has a dinner party. And oh, my gosh. It's very similar to Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. Mm. There's just so much hatred and argumentativeness in it that it's really great. It'll really put you on edge, just like Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. That episode of The Office is not easy to watch. A lot of times Michael Scott puts you on edge just with his awkwardness and weirdness, but that episode in particular is really difficult.
I've often used that title as shorthand. I've gone to parties that sort of start devolving into that kind of party and say, oh, this is too Virginia Woolf for me.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get out of there as quickly as you possibly.
Yeah. Especially when the couple starts arguing in front of everyone.
Oh my gosh, that's the worst.
And then when it's time to play Hump the Hostess, then you need to leave because that's when it all goes.
Leave that party.
That's when it's irreversible.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah, you have to get out of there.
Yeah.
All right, so dates. So that's pretty amazing. So I think we've given a lot of helpful hints to find romance or to find anti-romance.
Yes.
Yeah.
You want to sabotage a date?
If you want to sabotage it or nurture it.
I got one more that people should see as if you're going to have a date and... Scott Pilgrim versus the World from 2010 is an incredible date movie. It still holds up right now, but I fear in 10 years it's not going to hold up very well. So that's one that's you can still go see now. That's really great.
I went on a date and saw that movie.
Fantastic.
It was a good date. It was nice.
Yeah.
That's a lot of fun. That movie is so fun. It really is.
Showing at the Loft Cinema over Valentine's weekend as our cult classic.
Oh, that's great.
Because it's a great, it's especially a great date movie for young people, I think.
Fun. And I don't like, I'm not a comic book person, but I still liked it. So.
Well, it puts dating, it uses video games as a metaphor for dating.
Right.
Right? He has to defeat all the exes.
The exes, yeah.
So pretty great stuff. I love that movie. I went back and watched it again just for this episode, and I recommend it highly. And little did I know you were showing it for Valentine's. That's great.
Yeah. We're also showing In the Mood for Love on Valentine's Day if you're interested on 35 millimeter. I know. So just saying, if you've got nothing to do and then you hear this before Valentine's Day, you should come see it.
If you see me crying,
and I'll be the guy wearing the shiny suit and the skinny tie. Yeah. Nice. Well, thanks, Resting Heather. This has been very informative.
A lot of fun.
Yeah. A lot of fun.
Yeah.
Dating can be fun. It can be horrible, too.
And scary.
And scary.
And, and argumentative and...
Like great cinema.
Yeah.
I mean, dating's like great cinema. So that brings me to rule number 805 of the Many Rules of Film Club, is that animation is not just for kids because grown-ups like it, too. And we're going to be looking at Pixar films next time on the Many Rules of Film Club, so don't miss that. So please check us out on iTunes. Please check out our website, manyrulesoffilmclub.com. Tell a friend. Tell a date.
Yeah, let us know if you'd like to hear a certain episode. We're open to new topics.
So we'll see you next time on the Many Rules of Film Club.